This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome in to hour two of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. So much to get to over the course of the next hour. Former college basketball head coach led Marquette to a Final Four. Tom Crean is going to join us coming up in about 15 minutes, break down all things Final Four. And the women's Final Four, Michael, is now set after what was just an awesome night of women's college hoops yesterday. All eyes around the country were on this game. And Caitlin Clark and the Iowa Hawkeyes got their revenge, their redemption from losing to LSU in the national championship last night in a big way.
Yeah, don't you love it when you see somebody raise their level of play to a higher level, right? I mean, Pat Riley did that when he talked to the Miami Heat before a playoff game, and he was talking about walking across a 2x4 on the ground. It's easy, right? No problem. Everybody can do it. But when you raise that 2x4 20 feet, it's harder things to do. You got to raise your play. And man, she did it, Stormy. It was fun to watch. I was surprised the whole game that they didn't try to deny her the ball. And I know she's really good at getting out of problems, and her handle with the ball in her hands is outstanding. She can go right or left. But I thought, to me, they would try to get her to kind of be out of the flow of the game like West Virginia did. And West Virginia played them. I think the games that I've seen so far, I thought West Virginia has played them tougher than anybody.
I agree. And I think there were a lot of missed opportunities defending Caitlin Clark last night. I mentioned it in hour one, the fact that they continuously were putting Haley Van Lith on Caitlin Clark, despite it not working. And Clark just torching her every step of the way. It was a terrible mismatch when Flaje Johnson, who has typically been the girl that has that toughest defensive assignment, wasn't there until the fourth quarter. It just didn't make any sense to me, but that's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And Iowa walks away a winner. They were bet up from a 1.5 point favorite to 2.5. They cover, no problem. The total goes over. And Michael, as we talk about Caitlin Clark and her legacy, in addition to being already the NCAA all-time leading scorer, men's or women's, she's the three-point leader. She added to the resume last night, career tournament three-point leader, career tournament assist leader, could potentially be the tournament scoring leader when she gets to the Final Four. This lady is pushing for legend status in the sport.
Yeah, no question. And you know what was interesting? You know, you and I talked about it when we signed off the show yesterday about who we thought was going to win. And I thought LSU, as you did too, because I thought LSU was just going to be able to take her out of the game and force the other players to beat them. And they did. They rose to the occasion, but she rose as well. But for me, when that line was ticking up, what I thought was fascinating, because before I turned the game on, I went to my DraftKings app and I looked at what the line was, and it ticked up. And I'm thinking, isn't this great for women's basketball? Mm-hmm. Like, we're seeing line movement that we typically would see on a Sunday afternoon before 1 o'clock, right? We're seeing that people are coming in. And I think, you know, you and I both know, having done this, you've done it way longer than I have, that line movement only happens when people you respect bet money. And so that line movement kind of made me smile about how people that are do this for a living, are respected, are betting this, which to me is the best part of the whole Caitlin Clark story. You know, everybody can put the pizza money down to bet because they're rooting for her. But when the line moves like that, you kind of feel like, I got this now. Yeah, there's some people that know what they're talking about are betting her.
And to that point, Director of Sportsbook Operations for DraftKings, Johnny Avello, texted us earlier today saying that that did set the record. It was the most bet women's basketball game in history through DraftKings. And the team that they are playing next in the Final Four, UConn, their win against USC was the third highest bet handle in the sport. So I think it's safe to say historically the most bet day ever in women's basketball. And the product delivered. They were two really great, interesting games, tons of star power. And now I'm super excited to watch Iowa, who's a 2.5 point favorite, take on UConn, who did not have the experience in the postseason that they wanted to last year. Meanwhile, Iowa loses the national championship, so they're just as hungry as well. But it's going to be an awesome matchup with two of the best in the game, and Caitlin Clark and Paige Beckers.
No question. And Gino's such a great coach that, you know, what strategy will he impose on Caitlin Clark? How will he handle her? And then the underlying factor in this too is the resentment, the hostility that has motivated Caitlin Clark. The fact that UConn didn't even recruit her, didn't even offer her. And, you know, what she has taken personally. So, look, we got till Friday. I saw the interview on the way back on the team bus. They're headed right to Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland is such a great – it's a Final Four city for the women's basketball tournament, which is great for Cleveland. Hopefully they'll have good weather. It doesn't look like it, though, but they'll be in line of the – you know, Stormy, you haven't asked this question. I think it's important. I mean, the blocking out of the sun, I think the eclipse goes right through Cleveland on that time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see, that wasn't on my radar at all, Michael. I got to be honest with you, but leave it to you for the top tier information that we need on this Tuesday afternoon. So like I mentioned, Iowa 2.5-point favorite, total 162.5 in the Final Four game. NC State taking on South Carolina, the undefeated Gamecocks laying 11.5 points in that game, total 139.5. So it'll be fun to see if UConn or NC State can shock some people or if Caitlin Clark versus the undefeated Gamecocks is ultimately inevitable. And I'm sure ESPN would certainly love that. But Michael, we go from a woman in Caitlin Clark, who you call, right, the ultimate competitor, the way that she handles herself, her approach to the game being something special, to a guy who maybe you've questioned a time or two in Joel Embiid. Every day on the program, we've been doing an edition of What's on Michael's Mind. What's on your mind today?
Well, the big fella's coming back. I mean, last night, you know, on the local news channel, he's coming back. They say he's in really good shape. But I think what was more important, and don't laugh now, Stormy, don't fall, which is really important, is that what's on my mind more than him coming back is I listened to Woj's reporting of the story. And Woj is really connected in the 76er organization. And his spin on it was, it's now or never. We got to get this thing going. Like, I heard, and if you go back and listen to the clip, I heard a sense of desperation coming out of Philly. Desperation in this sense. Desperation in the patience of him being healthy is wearing thin. The patience of where this team is going to be down the road is wearing thin. We know this. They're going to sign Maxey to an extension, but basically they don't have anybody else other than Embiid under contract. So this team is going to go through a change in the offseason, and I think they want to get a handle on where are they. And I think it's tying Nick Nurse's patience of where they are. And we all know, no matter if he comes back, I know Tim Legler said that if he comes back, they're a bona fide candidate to win the East. Please stop. I've seen this before. It's not going to happen. You know, even when he was the MVP, they couldn't win the East. So can we just put a lid on that? The reality of it is I think it's what I heard in Woj's voice, which was music to the 76er fan that I am, was maybe reality setting in. That this window is closing because you can't count on him being healthy. This is the second time on the same knee. He's not a medical marvel. He always gets hurt.
He's been out since January 30th, following that surgery on his left meniscus. Where things sit right now as far as this season goes, 7 games remaining, including tonight against OKC. According to Tim Bontemps, he was not at shoot-around this morning, but everything we've seen from Shams and Woj both saying there's potential that he can return this week. The expectation is that he'll return this week. Next on the schedule, at Miami Thursday, at Memphis Saturday, at the San Antonio Spurs on Sunday. They have the third easiest remaining strength of schedule in the NBA, Michael. And you think about where the 76ers were at prior to Joel Embiid getting injured. They were 29-15 prior to the surgery, 10-21 since. So if he comes back fresh, I know you say you're not biting on that 12-1 for the Eastern Conference. No interest there. But could they be competitive if he brings a freshness and adrenaline-fueled type of a comeback similar to what we saw from LeBron a year ago where he got injured in February? He ends up coming back to the playoffs healthy and at least makes the Western Conference final a year ago. Could we have a potential similar situation there with Embiid?
You know, I think, look, they're obviously a much better team when he plays. There's no question. They're better defensively. They have somebody they can go to and then get points in the paint. They can get, you know, he can shoot. He scores. He's a dynamic athlete. He's a dynamic player. But he's an ifer, right? It's just not sure he's going to play. I do think that they could. You know, the thing that bothers me about their team, it really comes back to their culture. They were happy that he won MVP. They weren't happy that they got to the, you know, they couldn't advance in the playoffs. And I don't know if it was P.J. Walker that said PJ Clark that said it or PJ Walker that said it or another player who was traded. No, I think it was the guard, Eric. It was Beverly, the guard, said, look, that team's more interested in individual stats than they are winning. And I think that I see that. Like sometimes when a player says something and you see it and you know it to be true, it's kind of revealing. And I thought what he said, what Pat Bev said, I thought I agreed with.
Seem destined for the play-in in the eighth spot right now, a game and a half back of the Miami Heat, around three or so games back of the Pacers in the sixth spot. They are 30-1 to win the NBA title. Don't cry. Don't freak out, Michael. I'm just saying it for awareness. Not that it'll happen, just for awareness. 31 to win the NBA title, 12-1 in the East, tied for third behind the Celtics, who are -130, odds on favorite to win the Eastern Conference, and the Bucks at +320. Prior to the injury, Embiid was playing awesome, 35.3 points per game, 11.3 rebounds, 5.7 assists in 34 games. And Michael, you love this. He's been reportedly ramping up his conditioning for a while. That's your favorite.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of it, because he's never been in condition. So, like, it's hilarious that he's ramping up his conditioning. Like, when he has a whole off season to get in shape, he's never in shape. So, like, that's the line that got me the most. I love that. That was the best.
Last 30 seconds. Do you think the Celtics are inevitable in the East?
No, there's no question. They're dominant and they're hungry. And I think it's going to take a miracle to beat them. Mm. And they, look, from the time that Danny Ainge ripped off the 76ers and they were able to fool him on Markelle Fultz and they turned their whole franchise, they've been looking uphill at the Celtics ever since.
Again, -130 to be the representative from the Eastern Conference in the NBA title series. We're going to hit the break when we come back. Tom Crean, former head coach, ESPN college basketball analyst, he joins us next. This is also a No Way, No Doubt day, and we have a great column to get into on VSiN.com that Michael put up earlier today. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Even with the calendar flipping to April, the madness continues in college basketball. As we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we'll get into some more college hoops talk with Tom Crean, who joins us now, ESPN college basketball analyst, former head coach, has multiple Big Ten titles with Indiana, brought Marquette to a Final Four. He's been joining us every week of the tournament and back on the Progressive guest line today. Coach Crean, welcome in. Thanks for joining us. And it is Final Four season. We are here.
No, it's great to be with you guys, and it's what's really inspiring is when the Brent Musburger voiceover introduces you to, like, that's high level.
Yeah, I love it. It makes me smile every time I hear it, Coach Crean. It's unbelievable because as
too.
A fat kid growing up in New Jersey, I would listen for the NFL. You were looking live. It just, like, it made my day, and it still does when I hear that voice. Before we go on the tourney, What's your reaction to how people defend Caitlin Clark? I was surprised last night that they didn't try to get the ball out of her hands like West Virginia did. As a coach, and you're watching, what's your instinct on trying to slow her down?
Well, first off, she's so good going to her left. I mean, she's got it's Steph Curry-like. It's really Trae Young-like with the way that she shoots that step back off her left foot. And she gets lined up. So, like, once she's across half court and coming in a full head of steam, it's almost too late. And, again, it bears repeating every time you talk about her. She leads the nation in assists. She's such a great passer. She's so quick and athletic from what you can see and then from what people say about her. So, with that being said, you've got to get a trap up there hard. You've got to be high-handed quickly if you're going to put pressure on her. I think you got to get up in the backcourt and turn her and not let her play that speed downhill game as much as possible. And again, I'm saying all that, and it's way easier said than done, but she can beat you so many ways. I don't think you can let her go left. I mean, she can go both ways. I think she operates so well playing off that left hand, left foot, and then she can drive it. You got to try to make her pass under pressure. But the one thing you don't want to do is you do not want to let her have any type of freedom. The more you can be physical with her, obviously, when she's coming off screens, the better. The more you can switch, the better. You almost got to push her looks and catches out and not let her get the ball coming downhill and then force her to make a decision. But you got to have 2 to 4 sets of hands up constantly to take away her vision and to take away her look at that rim.
Well, and then even when you do that, because yes, she can shoot from anywhere on the floor, but she's the nation's leading assist maker as well. So she can beat you in so many different ways. Tom Crane joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Let's turn the page to the men's tournament here, because we do have a couple interesting games, big favorites in the top seeds in UConn and Purdue. But I want to ask you about NC State, because they're the first team with 14 plus losses to reach a Final Four, yet they have won 9 straight elimination games. What's allowed this team to change so dramatically from what we saw in the regular season? And are they capable of keeping it up against Zach Edey and the Boilermakers?
Well, I think they're capable of it. I think it's just confidence. I mean, I really do. I mean, everyone talks about the Virginia free throw miss that Michael O'Connell hit. But you got to look at the way they played inside of that game. They made timely shots inside of that game. And I think what you have is DJ Burns is getting a lot of attention. Diarra is a real key to how DJ Burns plays, because if you double off him, he's in position offensive rebound, or he can get a drop off. I think one of the reasons they are passing the ball so willingly and they're moving it so well. And I'm sure there's some truth to what DJ Burns said, where the people are playing for each other. They're on time for things. They're not complaining a lot. You know, chemistry is really, really important. And when you're winning, it's a lot easier to get it, as everybody knows, right? And so they look like they have that chemistry. I think they were passing the ball pretty well at the end of the year, even before this started. They really should have beat Duke late in the regular season. And they really stopped going to DJ Burns as much as they could. They couldn't guard him then. And then what they've done in the tournament, they've moved the ball. They've defended. Michael O'Connell is a 3-year grad from Stanford, played for Joe Mantegna at Blair Academy. So he's been extremely well coached, extremely competitive. And I think he energizes their team. I think he, with the way he moves the ball, the way he defends, his timely threes, I think it energizes everybody else, like DJ Horn, Diarra, DJ Burns, Ben Middlebrooks, KC Morsell. I think he energizes their team with his defense and his ability to move without the ball. I don't think it's a fluke. I think it's more, you know, why weren't they winning during the year? And maybe they did have some issues that they had to overcome. But they've overcome them, and they've got so many different ways that they can beat you now.
Yeah, and I thought too, Coach, I thought you're right. I thought Middlebrooks, him coming in that game, kind of gave him a toughness. I thought they out-toughed Duke. I really did. I think this is a tough-minded, mentally tough team that – you know, thought that they had, you know, they were trailing, but once they got control of the game in the second half early, their toughness looked like made Duke wilt away.
Well, they've been out toughing people throughout the whole NCAA tournament, even, but I don't think it's a toughness issue with Duke as much as it's a adjustment issue with them. And they've not adjusted in 3 games on how they guarded DJ Burns. And really, Carolina didn't either when they beat him. They did a little bit at the beginning of the game. DJ Burns, this is why it's going to be so interesting to watch with Edey, because you can't let either one of those guys get into their rhythm dribble. Now, Zach Edey needs less dribbles, and he's obviously bigger, and he scores so good over his left shoulder. But everybody lets those guys get into their rhythm. And Zach is so hard to referee because he's 7'4", and when he puts out those elbows, they're going to be in your chest and facial area. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's the way he's built. I don't think he's doing it intentionally as much as he's been taught very well on how to post up and seal and use his body to his advantage. But the team that's going to win that game, a lot of it is going to be the weak side rebounding. Some of it's going to be the shooting, obviously. I think can Purdue guard DJ Horn, which is easier said than done. I still think the weaknesses for Purdue is Lawyer and Jones' ability to really guard the ball. I still think that's true. But bottom line is you're not blocking Burns' shot, right? Because if you don't have incredible length and reach, you're really not changing Burns' shot because he's so good. He's so wide-shouldered. He's so good at putting his shoulder into you. And that jump hook is where you can't get it. And it's not really a jump hook. It's kind of a push hook. But you can't get to it. and I think that's where Edey, if they're going to have to help on that. Because Zach Edey can get to 7-7 in the next couple of days. And he's going to have trouble getting to that shot. and changing it. Like the next game, Klingon can change a lot of shots. And we'll talk about that, but like he can change a lot of the game. Edie changes shots, but he doesn't change you if you go through his chest, which is what DJ Burns does.
And it's funny too, like you see and you hear how big Zach Edey is, but it didn't really come to full scope or full effect for me until I saw him cut down the nets without the ladder. And I was like, okay, yeah, he really is that big. Purdue, a 9-point favorite against NC State in that game. UConn, a 12-point favorite against Alabama. What makes this UConn team so elite? And are they poised for being the first team since Florida to go back-to-back national championships, their most narrow victory so far in this tournament, Coach, by 17 points?
Well, they've got incredible speed. They throw the ball ahead. They share the ball, but it all comes down to the accuracy of their passing. I've said for months that they are, in my opinion, watching it as much as I do, they're the best passing team in college basketball. And with that being said, they're also the most willing passing team. And what they've done is they've taken, you can see the improvement in their team when you look at Steph Castle. He was a point guard in high school, obviously going to be a high pick in this draft whenever he decides to come out. He has absolutely learned how to move without the ball in that offense. He doesn't need the ball to impact the game. And that says a lot because that's their team. That's Cam Spencer. That's Alex Caravan. They've got two bigs. Samson Johnson went 5 for 6 the other day in the game. Donovan Klingon is as good in the country as there is at not only blocking the shot, but changing your view if you can actually get the shot off, which is why I think it's going to be such a factor. Because Alabama's built on layups and threes and free throws. Very, very few mid-range type pull-ups. I don't think Alabama's going to be able to get those layups when Klingon is in the game. Because Mark Shears gets deep threes. He's got 30-foot range, and rightfully so. Does an unbelievable job in the two-man game. I love the Brunson comparison, but I don't think he's going to get those layups. And Alabama, when Alabama's at their best, they're getting a bunch of layups too. I know they hit 16 threes the other night. But you also got to remember Clemson makes their free throws. They went 8 of 16 on the line, and P.J. Hall fouled out. Alabama couldn't guard Clemson inside. You know, the switching, things like that, getting back to why Connecticut's so good, they'll take advantage of those things. They'll take advantage of the switches in the matchups, and they're really good at that.
Coach Crean, you're awesome. Thanks again for
awesome
joining
work.
Us.
I love it. Got to learn something every Anytime. Time, Coach. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the insight's unbelievable. He's been joining us every step of the way in the tournament. Just great nuggets. Follow him on X at Tom Crean, checking out all the great work on ESPN. We're going to hit the break next on the Lombardi Line. No way or no doubt. Stay with us.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For a limited time, we're offering at VSiN 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. All you need to do is sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage, though. This offer is for a limited time. VSiN.com/splits is how you can get your free 2-week access to VSiN's betting splits.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
All right, Michael, 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk wants a second contract he feels he has earned, but the 49ers don't seem inclined to give him one right now, or at least not at the number he wants. Ayuk discussed the situation on the Nightcap podcast with Shannon Sharp and Chad Johnson. Take a listen.
I'm trying to get what I deserve. I feel like this season playing football, I figured out who I was as a person, as a player, what I bring to the table, what I bring to the locker room, what I bring to organization. And just the value I hold when I walk in that building, because people are going to follow me because I've done it the right way since I've been in that building. From the first day I walked in there to when I was in there earlier this morning, I've done it the right way. So, and if they don't see it worth in that, that's all it is.
Michael, no way or no doubt, does Mike Tomlin's younger, longer-haired twin deserve a new deal this offseason?
And no doubt he deserves a new deal. But obviously, I think for the 49ers who have that fifth year, they're wondering, where are we, right? And it's a dilemma. He averaged 13 yards per catch 2 years ago, 114 targets, 78 receptions. Last year, he stepped up his game to another level, had 105 targets, 75 receptions, averaged almost 18 yards a catch. Pretty damn good, right? Really increased. That's almost a 5 yards increase in yards per catch, which is astronomical. And he went down in touchdowns from 8 to 7. So I'm sure the Niners are saying, look, we definitely want to pay it. You're in the top category of receivers. But if you think you're getting up to Jefferson or you think you're getting up to Tyreek Hill, that $30 million threshold, which is what I'm sure he's asking for, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's the number he wants. I don't think that's going to get that done.
And if you think you're walking or not going to play early to hold out, due to his status under the fifth-year option, he'd be subject to a daily fine of $40,000 for skipping training camp. That's a lot. That's a lot. Okay, four quarterbacks, Michael. Could they make history that four quarterbacks would be selected in the top 10 of the NFL draft? Or I'm even going to throw this out and say 1, 2, 3, 4, because that's the way we've been seeing it in so many mocks.
No way. I'm not going there. I'm not ready to go there. I think this is what Arizona wants. It's what the Chargers wants. It's what's created this time of the year is a sense of desperation. I think cooler heads will prevail. And I think ultimately, you have to ask yourself. Now, there's a report out today to add some credence to this, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, but it makes sense to me that Minnesota isn't going to just go all in on any one of these quarterbacks. They could wait a year. They could wait. They'll go with Darnold and wait. That makes sense. I think to me, Stormy, you have to ask yourself the question, and I keep saying this to people I talk to about, like, what's the difference between some of these guys and Sam Howell, who played last year and played well at times when he was protected, which wasn't at times, and some of it, just because new doesn't mean better, right? I think to me, when you want to turn that car in, you want to get significantly better, or else you end up like Pittsburgh. And just like when I said, when they drafted Kenny Pickett, there's no way Pickett's ever going to be in the top 10 players in the league. Just no way. He just wasn't built that way. And it's true. And so I think you have to be patient. That's why I'm not going there.
I just wonder, Michael, on the Vikings part of it, why get the draft capital from the Texans if you weren't going to trade up and get a quarterback, if that were the case?
I think that's a great question, Stormy. And I think what they're saying is, now that we are no longer the prisoner in the Kirk Cousins hotel, that we're going to keep adding to our team. And that's a good thing. Because when we do get this quarterback, like San Francisco, we're going to be really good. And we're going to be below the cap, and we're going to have a ton of cap room, and we're going to be able to do everything. Like, you don't have to use those picks on quarterbacks. You can use those picks for starters that give you 5 years of really cheap pay.
The only other time in modern NFL draft history we did see four quarterbacks go in the top 10 was 2018. Baker Mayfield at number one, Sam Darnold number three, Josh Rosen at seven. I mean, Josh Allen at seven, Josh Rosen at 10. One of those quarterbacks has worked out. The other, still plenty of question marks there. We're going back to the NBA, Michael, because I have to hit you with this one. No way or no doubt, the 76ers are the biggest threat to the Celtics with Embiid back 100%.
No way. They don't beat the Celtics when, I mean, they couldn't, they had a chance to win it last year with Harden and Embiid. No way. I mean, first of all, the Celtics standard of play is so higher than what the 76ers could ever get to because of their, we're going to take care of it, we're not going to work that. There's just no way. Like, what more do we have to watch in America today that, you know, this whole notion, go easy, everybody go lax, it's no big deal. The teams that win go all in. They work their asses off. They compete. They play hard. They're in shape. Like, I don't understand why we have such a hard time recognizing what it means. Like, Dan Hurley coaches his team to get more out of his team. Meanwhile, everybody says, well, you got to be nicer. Dawn Staley does the same thing. You think she's a walk in the park at practice? I don't think so. You know, so there's just no way. I like Nick Nurse, but it's hard to coach a team hard when the organization says, no, we don't need to coach them hard.
76ers 13-1. Ahead of them, the Celtics an odds-on favorite, followed by the Bucks and Knicks. So a lot has been made of the way that DJ Burns has played in the tournament and that maybe he's playing the wrong sports. We had Jim Nagy on yesterday, Senior Bowl executive director, talking about the fact that he actually has fielded some texts from executives and from scouts about DJ Burns. Yesterday, we also saw Peter Schrager from NFL Network say the similar thing, that he's fielded texts from multiple GMs and scouts and that he would get a big turnout and potentially money if he participated in a pro day workout after the Final Four, Michael. No way or no doubt. NFL teams should take a look at Burns as a football prospect.
No doubt they should, but I'm not optimistic with the results because it's a different kind of player. You know, when I went back and I researched his background, you know, he was the third best high school player coming out of the state of South Carolina. He didn't play football. Like, and so you can go, he can go overseas and play in Greece and Germany. He could play in Italy, eat all the Italian food he wants, which I'm sure he probably would enjoy. But to go play the NFL, to get back into a stance and play in a, that's a whole other level of toughness. I don't see it. And I'm not calling the kid not tough. I'm just saying conditionally based on sports, it's a huge leap. And what Jim said yesterday was so true about Antonio Gates, because Nick Saban was at Kent State when Antonio Gates was there, and he could verify how good of a football player he was when he played there. Without any of that evidence, it's too damn hard. Now, if he was a wrestler, I would say it's got more probability to happen. Why? Because wrestlers are physical all the time. They understand the physicality of the sport, plus they have great balance.
Speaking to the lack of evidence, Burns was on the Rich Eisen show earlier this week, and he said he hasn't played football since he was a defensive end and tight end in middle school. So it has been a minute. We've talked a lot about Caitlin Clark today, and while we throw around the word generational a lot, she meets that mold. She has been a difference maker for the sport, and a lot of it is fueled by her competitiveness, Michael. No way or no doubt, the NFL can learn from the competitive drive and commitment to excellence someone like Caitlin Clark has.
No doubt. I think it's, to me, if you're going to hang her poster on the wall, it's the same thing if you want to hang Kobe's up there. You better understand who you're hanging on your wall. You better understand what goes into the makeup of that player. It's one thing to say you love Kobe. It's another thing to behave like Kobe. It's one thing to say you want to be Caitlin Clark. It's another thing to be like Caitlin Clark. You put the hours that she put in, the dedication to her craft, the commitment to go above and beyond what they had to do. I was listening to the broadcast today. We're talking about somebody shooting 15,000 threes a day or something like that. That's the kind of dedication it takes to get to the next level. There's no overnight sensations in any sport, in any field. And I think Caitlin Clark represents hard work. She represents the commitment to go to a standard above and beyond just the level of comfort. And there is no comfort in the way she behaves.
Last 60 seconds, Michael, no way or no doubt. The hybrid kickoff rule is just the beginning of the UFL borrowing ideas from these spring football leagues.
No doubt. I mean, they should. I mean, look, if you research an idea twice, if you borrow an idea twice, it becomes research, right? You know, they're not plagiarizing. They're research. And I think it's a great league. I think they should work in harmony with it. Why not? I mean, nobody's going to knock the NFL off the block in the fall. We know that. Yeah. But when you have a good idea, you know, Al Davis should say all the time, I'm not looking to be consistent. I'm looking to be correct. The NFL should take that model.
The kickoff rule, we talked yesterday about the visual spatial 4K cameras they have to be able to measure where the ball is at. The super challenge is an interesting thing that the UFL does that no one else does. But my favorite thing is the transparency you have with officials. Their mics, we hear the entire conversation about what goes into making a decision. That clarity and transparency has been huge. But I don't know if that'll ever get passed in the NFL. Maybe that's something we talk about for another day. We are wrapping things up on the Lombardi Line next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DK customers. You can earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, up to $2,500 in bonus bets your first 3 days on DraftKings when you use our code Lombardi. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use the code Lombardi when you sign up. That earns you a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager, right now. Welcome back into the Lombardi Line on VSiN and DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And Michael, you got a column up on VSiN.com today. Want to do a little writing spotlight. It's now or never for Trevor Lawrence. And this is a topic I haven't really heard a lot of people talk about, especially this offseason. What inspired you to put this together?
Well, you know, when DraftKings released their win totals, right, and they had Jacksonville at 9.5, I'm thinking, boy, the book sees this the same way I do, that his career, you would have thought, would have taken this huge spike forward, and yet here they are. They've made all these moves in the offseason. They were a playoff team 2 years ago, but they're only at 9.5. I mean, we know the Texans, I know they went to the playoffs, but the Texans are at 10.5. And so for me, it was like, I think it was a story, Stormy, that no one's talking about. And I think it's a big story. I really do. I think it should be the story of the offseason. I know one thing, Doug Peterson knows it's the story of the offseason because either he gets them to play well or he may not be there next year. And so everybody in the league is looking at, like, where did we go wrong with Lawrence? Like, is it him? Is it the offense? What is it? And that's what prompted me to want to write it, because I was a huge, and I write this clearly in the column, I was a huge Lawrence fan coming out. I saw him early in his career, and I thought he was sensational. I thought he was the next Peyton Manning. And then as I watch him now, I fall further and further away from where I think he could go.
Yeah, you had a great quote on that. You said, but like all waiting rooms, my patience is running dangerously thin. And you started off the article talking about perceptions, Michael. You said perceptions can be powerful, often more powerful than the truth. They also prevent us from searching for the truth. And when the perceptions are standing good, no one searches for the truth. So where do you stand on Jacksonville quarterback Trevor Lawrence? And so I'll ask you, Michael, where do you stand on Trevor Lawrence at this point in his career?
I think Trevor Lawrence is a mistake-prone quarterback who doesn't play with any consistency in any part of his game. And Caleb Williams got me on to relooking at him again, because Caleb Williams isn't very consistent either with his mechanics, his fundamentals, his footwork, his ball handling, all those things, right? And Lawrence isn't either. If you watch Lawrence, he may take his footwork, his ability to drive the ball and throw it is not as good. And so I stand in the category of that Peterson's got to change his mindset. Last year, they ranked 30th in the league in yards per attempt rushing. They were sixth in passing attempts. And I explain it in the column. It's hard to call runs that you can't get yards on. And it's hard to call pass plays when your quarterback's turnover prone and makes mistakes. But I think there's got to be a better balance. I think they've got to get the ball to their players that can really, ATN specifically, and try to minimize Lawrence's impact on the game. He's got a little bit of Dak Prescott. I think when he's throwing it 30, 33 times a game, you're going to get yourself in some trouble. You're asking him to do things at the line of scrimmage that I don't think he's really good at doing. I think he has got to be kind of grooved into it and make it very comfortable for him. I think you got to make the offense very easy for him too. I think he is not I'm going to change the protection. I'm going to do this. I'm going to move this around. No, no, no. Get up and go run it and make him feel comfortable.
Yeah, you talked a lot about the way that he takes chances with the ball and the mental mistakes, the assumptions he makes with the ball that can hurt his team more than help at times. And yes, he did surpass 4,000 yards this year. He did have 21 touchdowns despite dealing with a number of injuries. But you also look, 14 interceptions, tied for fourth most picks in the league, and an NFL high 21 total turnovers because of all the lost fumbles. I thought this was interesting, Michael. There are only 11 quarterbacks since 1978 that have turned the ball over more in their first three seasons. That is a list that includes a couple of Hall of Famers and Warren Moon and Peyton Manning, but it also includes guys like Blake Bortles and Mark Sanchez. So when you have Trevor Lawrence, where in that spectrum do you think he ultimately lands? Because as we talk about perceptions, he was considered that elite number one overall quarterback. We've talked about generational a lot today. That's how he was perceived. Yeah. So what ultimately does he become?
I think he becomes, I don't want to say this, but it becomes a guy who's got to blend in the offense, not carry the offense. The most concerning thing, Stormy, is his accuracy and his inability to get the ball down the field. I think he plays very robotic. I think he plays almost with no flow to his game. And when he does that, he doesn't hold the ball long enough. I mean, think about this. His career best yards per attempt down the field was 7.1 last year. His first year with the great Urban Meyer, he was at 6.0. I get that. I excused him as we sat in the waiting room. Blame it all on Urban. The next year with Dougie, he's at 7, and this year's at 7.1. Like, he doesn't get the ball down the field. And his accuracy gets too many balls batted at the line. To go along with the fumbles, he's got 33 balls batted at the line of scrimmage in 2 years. He's a 6'6" quarterback. Like, how is this happening? You know, because this angle of his delivery, he's careless. He kind of rushes things. I think he plays like a guy that doesn't have 91 career starts. That's what drives me crazy about him. He's got 50 starts in the NFL, and he has another 41 in college football, and yet he plays as if there's no feel to him. There's no rhythm to his game, and that's a concern. And I think, to me, the patience is going to wear thin, especially in Jacksonville, where they're counting on him to lead them. And when DraftKings said Jacksonville's a 9.5, that's, you got to bet the over there, they're saying they don't believe it either. They're saying they don't believe it either.
And with that, Michael, bettors have already brought that down where it's open 9.5, but it's down to 8.5 now at this point. They're plus 240 in the AFC South after being an odds-on favorite last year, and the season obviously fell apart. What I did think was interesting going through the schedule last year too, Michael, was they were 8-3 to start the year, obviously fell off a cliff the back end. Trevor Lawrence was dealing with a litany of different injuries and was just off as a player in general. But they only won one game the rest of the way. It was against the Carolina Panthers, a game in which Trevor Lawrence did not play. So the lone game that they won the back end of the season was the C.J. Beathard game. It wasn't even the Trevor Lawrence one. And that's why I hate to use this example because I'm a 49ers fan and keep going back to it. But we talk so much about it's not how you, where you're drafted, but how you play. Like Brock Purdy, obviously Mr. Irrelevant. It's not about where he was drafted, it's where he plays. And it's the same thing, just on the opposite end for Trevor.
No question. And the game that they won against Carolina, they ran the ball for 155 yards in that game. But you hit the nail on the head. So one thing you always want to look at a quarterback is what his third down numbers are. This is where J.J. McCarthy has moved himself up in the draft. He's good on third down. Whereas when you look at Trevor Lawrence, the game's moving so fast, he's not good. But where it really worries you the most, Stormy, is on first down. Where that is, Brock Purdy averages 10.3 yards per attempt on first down. Whereas Trevor Lawrence is at 7.3. It's the highest number. He's thrown 18 of his 39 interceptions on second down. Like, this guy just doesn't, there's no down that he's really comfortable within. So you say, well, run a play action pass scheme. Well, he's not great on first down. And they got him in shotgun all the time, and I'm not sure that does them a lot of good. I just think, to me, when you, and who have they beaten? I know they beat Buffalo over and overseas, right? I know that was one of their signature wins. But, I mean, when the Chiefs came to town, they couldn't move the football. They scored 9 points. When the 49ers came to town, they scored 3 points. If you have an elite quarterback, you're scoring 12 points in those two games, please. And you have an offensive coach who's supposed to be a quarterback guru. Like, where are we going here? And nobody talks about it. Like, he's just the first pick overall and everything's going to be fine. Meanwhile, the rest of the draft has fallen out. Like, he's closer to them than he is closer to being the Peyton Mannings or the Warren Moons that you cited.
Yeah, and I know another thing you talk about in the article is the way that his collegiate career went. 90 touchdowns, 17 picks, 39-3, national championship MVP. And you said past performance is the best indicator of future achievement, but those who believe Lawrence will click are relying on the past from Clemson, not in Jacksonville. And I know he got off to a rough start with Urban Meyer, had a Pro Bowl season after that, although I don't know how much stock we put into that honor these days. And then it fell back off again this season. So you're right, there are a lot of questions about him. And it does feel like it's now or never for Trevor Lawrence, because contractually entering the fourth year with a $25 million option waiting after the season, you called it in the article a defining moment.
It is. And when you go back and look at their season, who did they beat that's any good? Right. I mean, they got killed by Houston at home in that game. Right. When the Houston week three.
Yeah. 37-17.
They beat the Colts twice. All right. So they came back and beat Houston in Houston. But I think Houston was playing the backup quarterback at that time. I think Stroud was hurt. But who have they beat that's any good? I mean, Cincinnati with the backup. I mean, Cincinnati put, you know, they scored 31 on Cincinnati. Cincinnati wasn't a good team last year. I just think to me it's a little bit of our perception of him and where he stands as opposed to how he's played.
No question about it. Great stuff. That's it for us today. But if you missed any of the program, remember you can download the Lombardi Line in podcast form wherever you get your podcast. Coming up next on VSiN, Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson on DK Network. Pablo Torre finds out. Have a great day, everybody.